Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Seneca Podcast, a weekly discussion of current affairs in China, coming to you from the pop-up Chinese studios here in Beijing. I'm Jeremy Goldhorn, hosting without Kaiser today, but joined once again by regular co-host David Moser. Welcome back, David.
Thank you, Jeremy. Good to be here.
Good, and I'm not going to, you know, tell people how talented you are because they've had enough of it now.
Wait.
CT academic director, jazz musician.
Enough.
So today we're going to be talking about a fascinating topic that has been requested by a number of our listeners, which is the situation for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender or transsexual people in China, LGBT community. With us to discuss this today, we have Fan Puopuo, who's a gay filmmaker, writer, and activist, born in 1985, a graduate of the Beijing Film Academy. He published Happy Together, complete record of 100 queer films in 2007. He's received a prize in an LGBT research paper from the Chi Hung Foundation, various other awards. He directs the China Queer Film Festival tour, and he has made a number of documentaries, including The Good Days, Taipei City of Rainbow, New Beijing, New Marriage, and Chinese Closet. Fan Puopuo, welcome to Seneca.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for inviting me, and it's my honor here to talk about LGBT in China. Yeah, this is Puopuo.
So I'd like to start by recalling the year 1997 when the Chinese Criminal Code was revised to eliminate the very vague crime of hooliganism or liumangzui, which was used to persecute many types of people, but also particularly was a crime that banned private adult homosexual behavior. And then a few years later, in April, in 2001, the Chinese classification of mental disorders formally removed homosexuality from its list of mental illnesses. And these things happened while I was here, and I remember thinking, wow, what a sign of progress. And I've always felt that the China's dealing with the LGBT community is perhaps China at its changing China at its most tolerant and the closest ideal to an open society, that if they could deal with other minority or uptight bullshit groups, it might be better. I was sort of preparing this as the lead into our talk, but one of our guests today couldn't actually make it because of some event that was banned, like many things have been lately. So it's not like everything is hunky-dory. But can I start by asking you, Fan Puopuo, what is the situation like for the LGBT community? What are the problems and what's easy?
I think, as you said, in China, in the two big change in 1997 and 2001, so now being gay is not illegal, and it's not a mental health disease, but there is a lot of taboos of culture promotion, such as gay films can't be shown in the cinema, and when media report about LGBT, there is censorship. But I think for if you are gay or lesbian or transgender, bisexual, personally, you don't really have a big problem living your own life. There is a very big gay club in Beijing, right, very close to our studio, and there are over 20 gay bars in Shanghai and a lot of lesbian bars. Also in China. I think if you and for a lot of NGOs these days, they still have a lot of challenge, such like they can't registered as an NGO. It's very hard for those organizations to organize events because be on the street to organize a parade is almost impossible in China.
So it's any kind of action that is sort of perceived as political activism is not really possible to do.
Yeah, I think depending on how you identify activism, if we just take the example of the U.S. and they have a lot of parade and it's really impossible. But here in China, you can see people have our LGBT movement with how to say the Chinese style, a lot of
Chinese characteristics. We should say on the podcast.
So a lot of organizations that do events online, that do they collect pictures from people, and some organizations they do lectures and do screenings. Though we can't do it in the bigger theaters, but there is some cafe and some university can organize. This is
and what do you show at the screenings? What's the purpose of these events?
I think the reason why I became a filmmaker is that I think culture can build a bridge between different communities. When I was in university, there is really homophobia of classmates in my class. And after he watched a lot of gay movie, and he started to have a new idea. For those screenings and the cultural events, we also try to make more people see the image and start to understand about being LGBT. Because before you meet them, you always have some weird image. You can think they should be monster, but when you see them, then you will see that they can be your friends. So this is very powerful.
Do you think that, and this is for Jeremy too, I suppose, that there's some overlap between the sort of the urge to crack down on homosexual rights, but also just the fear the government has of large groups of anybody, because they treat religion very much the same way. They don't necessarily care about the specific belief, but they don't.
Yeah, you can pray at home, but just don't organize a church.
Don't organize a church. So is it like that? As long as you just keep to yourself and get online, no one's going to bother you, or what?
Yeah, I think as I said before, personal life is usually okay, but you can't be you can't ask for more rights, because I think this government is really afraid that people has more rights, then the government is losing the rights. But on the other side, I want to say, as LGBT individual, we face from one side stress from the government, but also in China, because we have very strong tradition about family ideas, family value, you always have to take the family name. And so a lot of LGBT, when they come out to their family, it's very hard. Sometimes they will not understand, and they have an argument, and even domestic violence. It's also happened a lot, and some of them even sent to conversion therapy. And
I'd like to talk about. Can I ask my question? You bring up a topic I wanted to ask about, which is a kind of East-West comparison. And well, I'd like to see what you have to say about it. I mean, I usually say this as kind of a joke, but I think there's some truth to it. That. In the United States, like if a young man comes out to his mother, says, "Mom, I have some news for you. I'm gay," that her reaction will be, "Oh no, my son is going to go to hell." But in China, you say, "Mom, I have news. I'm gay." The mother will say, "Oh no, I'm not going to have a grandson."
Yeah.
So exactly. does that make sense to you? That you see what I'm saying? There's a difference between the Christian homophobia and the Confucian homophobia. Do you have anything to say about that?
Oh, thanks for giving name to the Confucian homophobia. Yesterday, I had a dinner with my friend, and he had a terrible experience because after he came out, his dad came to Beijing all the way to look after him, actually watch him. So, and also he called his boyfriend's family also come to Beijing. So these two family were just have cooperation to stop them being together. But they have their own way to meet up. So that's you.
At least there's harmony there. There was agreement.
That is such a Chinese story.
And, and my friend, he's 35 years old, and it's, you know, and even if you are straight, if you don't get married after 30 years old, you will also get a lot of
the
pressure.
The victim of some confusion pressure, yeah. But leading on from that, David and I had also discussed this phenomenon you see in the Western media reported every 6 months or so about, and you especially before Spring Festival, about gay and lesbian couples kind of swapping, you know, to take somebody home to pretend to be their boyfriend or their husband or the wife. Is this a real thing, and how common is it?
It is real. So I know some friends do that, and even they don't only take fake boyfriend and girlfriend back home. They even have a fake marriage. Did you ever heard about that? It's in China we call it 形式婚姻, it's form marriage. And so some people call it contract marriage. So they have a fake marriage, then
there's also 同妻,
means women who marry with a gay man. My friend made a documentary about contract marriage, and they can't show it in China because these two couple they want to pretend to be straight. But I think maybe after years, you will see those images, and this topic has been very big in China.
It certainly can't be a stable arrangement, because sooner or later, it's going to fall apart, or the family is going to notice something.
Yeah, I heard a lot of stories. Like there is one guy. He's because his both of his parents died, so he doesn't. His family doesn't care. So he helped two lesbians to marry, and a few weeks ago he was in one wedding, and a few weeks later he was in another wedding, and because it's a small city, then they have a mutual relatives. Then there is one of the women just found, oh my god, this is this bridegroom. I saw him just a few weeks ago. He married for two times, and then he was reported, and so his family just beat him. Why you cheat my daughter? But later he has to tell the truth that your daughter is lesbian. I'm just helping her. It sounds like a comedy, but you can see that it's still very sad for those people to do it, and those family, how do they feel about being cheated? And
but this is very rich material for you as a filmmaker.
Oh yeah, I was thinking of making a film, a narrative film. Stories like this happens a lot.
I mean, if you made a happy ending,
just like the wedding banquet.
Yeah, wedding banquet is a similar plot, actually. Yeah,
yeah, I guess so. Let's talk a little bit about the BT in LGBT. Mm-hmm. How big is that side of the community? And also, how much of it is a real community in terms of you're describing four? Mm-hmm. I mean, at least you've identified four types of kind of sexual behavior that is different from traditional society, let's call it. And there could be more. I mean, the T, I'm sure you could break it down into a number of different types of people. Do these people in Beijing and in China, do they gel together as a real community?
I think I don't know why I personally have a lot of bisexual girlfriends, and they are so we talk about the gossip to each other, and we talk about the LGBT movement. We also talk about the men, about the girls, about dating. So I can see there and they try to set up a bisexual organization, and also because last year for the Beijing Queer Film Festival, we host a screening of a French documentary called Bisexual Revolution, and we have a panel discussion about bisexual. So you can, but it's still hard for bisexual to be very visible because the mainstream society has very big stigma to bisexual. A lot of people think, oh, bisexual are very lucky, they can fall in love with both boys and the girls, but actually they have they got stigma from the mainstream society because a lot of people think they are weird, they date with the mainstream society think they are homosexual, but in the same time in the LGBT community, and they were treated like they are not trustable because they might fall in love with straight people too. So I can see that they face a lot of challenge, and also for transgenders, because if you do the surgery, then you will lose a lot of benefit. So it's hard. But I want to say not. Actually, the LGBT is also, there are more and more characters following with LGBT. We have the LGBTQ, QIAA. Do you know what that mean?
No.
QIA either is usually interpreted as queer or questioning.
Yeah,
but I don't know about the other ones. Yeah.
But I is very important. I is the intersex. They were born with both the, how to say?
Genitalia, male and female genitalia.
Yeah. And A is asexual. And also Ellie. It means you are straight, but you are together with the LGBTQ community. But for asexual, it's even more complicated. Last year, we also show a documentary just called Asexual from the U.S. And there is one sense was really very impressive for me, that those asexual group, they were sending some flyers in the San Francisco LGBT Pride. You know, it's one of the most open-minded city in the world. But they still got a lot of questions. Some people said, "Oh, do we really have asexual in San Francisco?" Because are you guys?
What is it? What do they mean by asexual?
Asexual means you don't want to have sex with anybody.
Don't you think it's weird to ally somebody like that with the LGBT community? Because somebody who doesn't want to have sex has no problem. I mean, just live your life.
In the US, we just call them WASPs.
Yeah.
But it's. I think we can unite together just because we are a sexual minority. Because people think we are weird of our sexuality.
But don't you think, especially in China, you're at risk if you make this identity so inclusive, you're partly at risk of being less able to really influence mainstream society, because they'll look at you and think, really, they are a bunch of freaks. Look at all those, too many letters, too many letters. You know what I mean?
But I think I would love also always hug with the stigma. If there is stigma to me, I won't say just I know some how to say, I don't know.
I think there might be strength in numbers, though, on the other hand, because if the more people that can identify with the movement, and the more the blurrier these boundaries are. And they are very blurry, actually, And even in one lifetime, they can blur one into the other. That you're just, it's more inclusive. More people will say, yeah, I'm a part of this movement, say, if you just look at statistics, China has at least, 50 million or 60 million gay homosexual people, right?
Does that number make sense to you, Papa?
I know, I don't really care about numbers, but it must be a huge amount.
It's such
a big population.
The size of a European country.
Yeah, that is a big country.
Yes.
I read an article recently about the pink dollar in China. Is that something that you come across as people who decide that, okay, here's a market of consumers?
Yeah, now they say if you have money, then you have power. So you can see how many people go to the big gay club every weekend,
spending their money on very expensive drinks cover charges and Ferraris.
And there is also some gay website with a lot of advertise of underwear and what else, gay tourist. There is a gay man dating app and lesbian dating app now in your cell phone. So yes, it happens.
And let's talk about the internet a little bit, because one of the things I've noticed over the years is that the internet enabled certain minority groups in China, and the two that I'm particularly thinking of is the LGBT community and sufferers of hepatitis. Mm. Who were scattered all over the country, and many people in smaller cities, very conservative provincial places, yes, who suddenly, when they got online, could actually discover that they weren't alone. How big is the impact of the internet been, do you think, on the LGBT community? And what are the major things that people are doing online?
I don't have a certain data, but from my personal experience, the internet really changed my life of being gay. When I I think when I was in middle school, I already started to see some gay website and to read some online literature and even watch some gay porn from internet. And after I came to Beijing, I started to have the community because of internet. There was some BBS from the Peking University. I was on it, and they have a monthly gathering event, and it's a very good platform for you to meet with the other gay men. After I graduated from school, I became a filmmaker and activist. So we do a lot of events. We always promote them with internet. In the time we promote with on BBS and some forum, but now since the internet and the media is developing so fast, now you have to, if you want to promote your events, you have to have a Weibo and your WeChat, and sometimes I feel a little too much information, and also everybody's using a cell phone to find a boyfriend.
Right. what are the most popular apps for that?
There are two. I know there are two major gay apps. International gay apps. One is Jack D and one is Grindr. But I think
I have to say that again because I don't quite. Jack D.
Jack D. Yeah.
How do you spell that?
And Grindr.
Okay.
We'll find the links.
Yeah, but Jack D is more popular in China than Grindr. So when my friend come to Beijing, I always give them these tips. And there are also two Chinese local apps. One called Blue D, and the other called Zank. Zank. So that different style, but you will find it. The neighborhood I live in Shuangxing, is now becoming more and more gay in Beijing. A lot of gay people move in that neighborhood. If you have those apps in your cell phone, and when you, if you put some nice picture and you open it, and the message will be
becoming the Castro of Beijing.
So some of our listeners should take note. Okay, I'd like to go back again, very far back in history, mm-hmm. and say that, one thing that I've read quite a few people arguing is mm-hmm. that in China, traditionally, there wasn't a taboo against homosexuality. I mean, there was the Confucian thing, you had mm-hmm. to have a family, but there wasn't a taboo against the actual sexual behavior, the sexual aspects of it, and their traditional terms for it, like the passion of the cut sleeve, the duan xiu zhi pi, and that
fen tao was another one, right? Uh-huh. Right. Mm-hmm.
Does this make sense to you? I mean, do you think that China has a sort of lost tradition of tolerance and even celebration for homosexuality, been interrupted because Europeans brought their uptight Christian values with them?
I partly agree with you, and a lot of scholars just compare old China with Greece in a long time ago, and it was very tolerant to homosexual. But on the other side, I won't say most of the stories in old China, they are all usually emperors, usually, only about love, is sometimes about the power. If you are rich, if you are powerful, then you can get you can sleep with anyone. So sometimes they just these stories show the power of the emperor. I do think somehow the homophobia was exported from Western country. I heard that we have the hooligan law. It's adapted from the Soviet Union, from Russia. Noticed that a lot of countries they have the law against being gay because of the colonial period from
they got
UK.
The laws from the British.
Yeah, and now the UK try to remove that, but those countries don't listen to them. So.
You know, I don't want to get controversial here, but I always think that it has a lot to do, Jeremy, with religion. It really does. Christianity, the effect of Christianity. You know, I don't want to get into that topic.
Or a certain interpretation of Christianity, if you want to be tolerant.
Well, yeah. Christopher Hitchens has this thing of religion poisons everything. I think it's really poisoned sex in the West in the way that China, it hasn't in
2 years ago, there is a very big news that there is famous actress, awarded winner actress, Lu Liping. She said something bad about LGBT, about same-sex marriage online. Then there were, it's interesting that she actually made an opportunity to talk about LGBT in mainstream media. And a lot of celebrities also against her when she was saying this.
That brings up a question I wanted to ask, actually. Do you, in the U.S., we have plenty of role models, LGBT mm-hmm. role models, because they're quite open. Do you really have anything like role models here in terms of celebrities or media figures at all? Or is it beginning to be some of that?
Oh, I think if you identify as a celebrity, there is not really a celebrity in China come out.
Because if you come out, you wouldn't be a celebrity the next day.
But there's some that are open secrets, right? I mean, some people know they're gay, but no one talks about it, right?
Yeah, but they don't talk about it. Then it doesn't count. And but there are some really famous celebrities in Hong Kong and Taiwan that are openly being gay or lesbian. So they are and they speak for LGBT rights, also trying to help something in China. Mm-hmm. So this matter really very good. Influence.
Who can you name some?
You know, Anthony Wong. He was very famous since when I was a child, and also Dennis Ho. She's a lesbian singer, and there is a very famous TV host, Cai Kangyong, and he's also a writer. He's openly gay. And a famous Taiwanese writer, Bai Xianyong, he wrote Crystal Boy. He's also openly gay.
I used to hang around with Xiangsheng performers sometimes. And there were a few cases where I saw these, because there are always two of them, right? And mm-hmm. they work with these theatrical troupes. And there were a few that were pretty clear that it was a very convenient arrangement. This is in the 90s, right?
Wow.
So it was very convenient for them. Because they always, we have to be in the same room because we have to rehearse. And,
right.
And it was like a great way to like to live their life, you know. But they obviously, you know, they're in the media, but they can't be out.
Yeah, that's a very different thing. How much play did the story of there's a Hong Kong millionaire whose daughter was lesbian, and he offered this huge amount of money for any guy. did people in the mainland pay attention to that in the LGBT community?
Yeah. After that news, everybody was saying, I wish I can marry her. But she's really cool. Zhao Shizhi, her name, I forgot her English name, but she's very involved with the LGBT movement in Hong Kong. She was she would speak for the rights. And also participating in some event.
Well, that brings up, can I ask about conversion therapy? Because you mentioned that word, mm-hmm. which is a little bit of a shock to me, because this is a controversy in the United States, and it's been really scandalous, some of these crazy conversion therapies. And I think it was Michelle.
Where they seek to use drugs or electric shocks or some horrible technique to kill you.
Not necessarily electric shocks, but spurious psychiatric sort of.
And
Michelle,
fake science.
Michelle Bachmann's husband, you know, was involved in this crazy thing. But do you mean to say China has been infected with this meme as well? Do they have conversion therapy here?
Do you know why they do it? They do it for money, because they just have a license, and sometimes not, and they know parents want their children to be straight. Mm-hmm. Then they do this, and they charge a huge money. I heard some of them can one treatment can a whole treatment maybe for about a few months. It costs 30,000 RMB. That means $5,000, and so it's huge money.
So can I just be clear on my understanding is correct? These are private companies, private doctors doing this. It's not a state paid. It's not paid for and organized by the state.
No.
Gosh.
Yeah, because as we said, in 2001, homosexuality was removed from mental health disease. But there is one thing left over there. If you are homosexual yourself and you don't have a good self-identity, then it is mental health disease. But in our mind, if you don't have a good self-identity, then we should help you to identify yourself, to get with the community. But those clinics, they treat, because they have this excuse, then they said it is mental health disease, then we can help you to be straight. So so with this this one thing left, small thing left, so they have something, so they can, we can't really just say they are illegal. So there is a lawsuit just a few weeks ago to a clinic in Chongqing, and also this person, he was treated with the electric shock, and now he not only sued the clinic but also Baidu.com. You know, he got this clinic as a result because of Baidu. And Baidu, they just, because those clinics, they pay money to Baidu, then when they search it with Baidu, then they get the result in very front. When you search homosexual, then there will be conversion therapy.
What's the Chinese for conversion therapy?
矫正治疗.
Okay, I'll Baidu it when I get home.
You can just Baidu 同性恋 homosexual, then you will get the result. It's terrible.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So once I got some numbers of those conversion therapy, and just called them and said, "Hey, doctor, I'm really sorry, but I need help. I'm straight, but I feel really uncomfortable being straight. Can you help me with conversion therapy to be gay?" And
it should work the other way too. That's beautiful.
And she said no. Oh, being straight is normal, but being gay is un-Euro, so you should not be become gay.
It should be like currency conversion, you know, American dollars to RMB, RMB to American dollars.
That's conversion, right?
Okay. You see, there's a lot of stuff you can make films about.
Yes.
So, I mean, let's end off with a little talk about your filmmaking.
Yes.
What motivates you as a filmmaker? What kind of stories do you want to tell? Who do you want to see your films?
Mm-hmm. I make film because I think I want people to know more about LGBT, and I will look what is the very important topics. So I think my first short movie was about same-sex marriage. We did a campaign on the street and have two couples taking wedding pictures on the street. Then I recorded the whole progress, and later I made a documentary called Be a Woman. It's about a drag queen, about transgenders, because I care about my transgender friend very much. And later, as I said before, the family issues is very important for Chinese LGBT. So I made a documentary called Mama Rainbow in 2012, and we show it in a lot of film festivals in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Mumbai, Jakarta. So we shoot six mothers in China tell the story how they accept their children being gay or lesbian. And now I'm working on a new project about those fathers, because after I met that Mama Rainbow, and everybody was asking where has the Papa gone. So now
Papa to Nara.
Papa to Nara. And you know, there is a very famous reality show in China called Papa to Nara, where has the Papa gone. So we were kidding that we are going to make a gay version of where has the Papa gone. So I last year I made a documentary called the Vagina Monologue, because I've been working on LGBT issue for about 7 years, and last year I think I should do something for feminism. And last year was the 10 years anniversary of the Vagina Monologue played in China in Chinese. So I interviewed five groups who are doing the Vagina Monologues in China, and to recognize this history.
Great. Well, on that note, let's move on to the final section of the show, which is recommendations. David, what you got for us?
Well, you mentioned one of them, the title. There's a classic book that if people haven't read it, they should just get it. It's called Passions of the Cut Sleeve by Brett Hinch. It's about ancient China. It's not about, it's about the, Popo was saying, the emperors and the elites, but it's about the history of homosexuality, male homosexuality in China. It's a classic short book. It's very easy to read and very interesting. And also, I'd just like to recommend the work in general of Li Yinghe, who's thought of as China's leading sexologist. I think this is one topic that goes out of date very fast. She's now retired from the cast from the Chinese Academy of Social Science. So.
Just on time.
just in time. No, but I mean, one article in particular called from a good compilation called Sex and Sexuality in China, edited by Elaine Jeffries. It's just called Regulating Male Same-Sex Relationships in the People's Republic of China. But it's 2006, and I think this topic goes out of date very fast. Things are much different now than they were in 2006. But she's a good source for the historical aspects.
Yeah, I think I would recommend a book published last year in Chinese. It's called Xing Zhi Bian, The Change of Sexuality. So it's written by two writers, two academic scholars from Renmin University, Mr. Pan Suimin and Ms. Huang Yingying.
Oh, I know them. I've done events at Capital M with them. Huang Yingying is a great researcher. Yeah, I agree with you.
Great. Yeah. So usually I feel very boring reading those books with a lot of data because I'm very bad at numbers. But their books is very interesting. If you want to, because I did research, I did a big, research three times in, they did three big researches, one in 2001, second one was in 2006, and the third one was in 2010. Then they have a lot of data, then they read this book, they wrote with this book, with all of their opinions. So their opinions are very interesting. And I think they are very cool.
Indeed. Huang Yingying has lived among sex workers for a long time doing research. And Pan Suiming is a very funny guy. He doesn't look like a sex researcher. He looks like a taxi driver, really. But he's a very cool guy.
I didn't have this point before, but now you can only imagine Mr. Pan Suiming driving a taxi.
So, Bobo, you had a second recommendation, right?
Yeah, I would recommend a film, a very good movie called Breakfast on Pluto. It's by Neil Jordan. It's by an Irish filmmaker. It's told a story of a transgender person travel from Ireland to London looking for her mother. And this film is not only told... it's not only about sexuality and gender, it's also about peace. It gives me an idea that no matter what kind of reason, you should not bring the violence. And it's one of my favorite movies, and it's beautiful and very good good acting. So I would recommend it.
Great. I'm briefly just going to stay on topic with this show with my recommendation, which is a book called Gaysia, G-A-Y-S-I-A. Subtitled Adventures in the Queer East by an Australian writer named Benjamin Law.
Yeah, I'm friends with him.
Oh. They're all connected.
What an incestuous show we have here.
Always. So, Popo, David, thank you very much. And listeners, we will see you, or you'll hear us again next week on the Seneca Podcast.